Artificial intelligence may need a new kind of regulation. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The European Union has released proposed new regulations on artificial intelligence today. The rules cover technology like facial recognition, autonomous vehicles, and a lot more. They call on high-risk artificial intelligence systems to be transparent, traceable, and under human control. The EU wants regulators to have the ability to check these autonomous systems the way they check pharmaceuticals, cars, or toys. This European story has major implications to U.S.-based companies from Microsoft, Alphabet, Google on down. Here is Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
The EU wants to be sure there's human oversight of artificial intelligence and that AI systems use high-quality data. For example, facial recognition technology trained to recognize diverse European faces. University of Arizona law professor Andrew Woods says the thinking goes like this.
I want the technology to be trained on people in my community because then at least it will be as accurate as it could be vis-a-vis, you know, our distinctive features.
But how do companies build a representative database? Is Facebook forced to share its treasure trove of European faces? Maribel Lopez of Lopez Research says that would be a big deal for U.S. tech companies that sell this kind of data.
So this definitely has business model implications for large U.S. tech companies in terms of how they monetize today versus how they might monetize in the future.
And by the way, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg was in Brussels earlier this week meeting with EU officials. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
There is an odd friction, a dissonance when it comes to markets and the news these days. We have all these coronavirus headlines and a Morgan Stanley forecast that economic growth in China will be cut in half this January to March quarter. Yet there's the stock market, which has lost only some minor steam over the last month, and it's up again this morning. Then there's some contradictory news from the housing market today. Let us sort all this out with Susan Schmidt. She's head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors in Chicago. Hi there.
Good morning.
All right. Home builders, we reported yesterday, quite optimistic. But then housing starts fall 3.6% in January, we learned today. Yet people applying for the permits to build something in the future, they're very optimistic. Can you make some sense of this?
Housing permit applications is the highest number we've seen since 2007. That says a lot about builders feeling confident that they're going to be able to get the labor and that interest rates are going to be able to stay low and people are going to be able to afford new houses. So it speaks to why the market is able to sustain such high levels, despite the fact that we've got global fears around coronavirus that hasn't dissipated yet. We're seeing good confidence, and that continues.
All right. Another statistic out this morning is inflation at the wholesale, not the consumer, but the wholesale level. The producer price index went up by the most in over a year, 0.5%. Well, that bears watching.
It does, but that's such a big jump that immediately it makes you think, what is the data? We haven't seen a lot of pressure in consumer price indexes. So the Fed is really watching that because inflation is a trigger for them to let them know when they think they might want to raise interest rates.
Susan Schmidt at Aviva Investors, thank you.
Thank you.
Now, maybe you have sorted out your closets and drawers using the strict principles of Marie Kondo. Now there's word of a corporate version. The Wall Street Journal is reporting today that the new CEO of Bed Bath & Beyond has ordered a general decluttering of all its stores. There will be fewer items on the theory that too much choice can cause a shopper to just give up. Now to the economic impact of the coronavirus. This is the latest reminder that when it comes to evaluating risk, humans are not spreadsheets and are therefore not as data-driven as we might like or assume. For more, let's turn to my Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig in London. Victoria, once again, human perceptions are at the heart of the economy.
Well, consumer spending matters a lot to the global economy, and big world events impact public sentiment. So with viral outbreaks like coronavirus, fear spreads quickly and causes people to stay home. That leads to a drop in spending, travel, and leisure activities, all things that grease the gears of the global economy.
And we know that social media now factors into public perceptions.
Yes. One expert I spoke to today, he's a professor of economics of disasters at Victoria University in New Zealand, said social platforms have likely helped fuel more public angst about the spread of this virus. One example, a personal example of this, my fiancé is in Hong Kong, and he says compared to a year ago, the streets are a little bit quieter, more people are wearing face masks, but no one's really panicking. Another reporter I follow on Twitter, though, who lives there, described it as apocalyptic. So it really depends who you follow and what their own experiences are. A bit of context here about fear and perception. During the SARS epidemic, one survey showed 23% of respondents feared that they would be impacted by the virus. The infection rate, though, was only 0.0026%. In Beijing, the tourism sector losses were estimated to be 300 times the direct cost of medical treatment for SARS in the city.
Now, 2 months or so into this coronavirus outbreak, we see evidence of an economic impact, don't we?
Exactly. Morgan Stanley, for example, now expects Chinese growth to be cut in half in the first quarter.
My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig in London, thank you.
Thank you.
They say never trust anyone over 30, and Adobe Photoshop, the photo-enhancing and photo-altering software, turns 30 today. A pair of brothers released version 1.0 on this day in 1990. To Photoshop is now a verb, and the software has changed the way we perceive brands and perceive ourselves, and not always in good ways. Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
19-year-old Sophia Kontos is a freshman at the University of Texas at Austin. I met her between class at the College of Communications, where she tells me she's into podcasting and digital media.
I don't remember Photoshop being a thing because I was already born like it was a thing.
She says for her, Photoshop is kind of like the internet. She doesn't remember not having broadband or not being able to search for things on her phone. Same thing with digital photo enhancement. Austin photojournalist Jorge Senuez-Lyon says he can definitely remember when Photoshop first appeared.
Early Photoshop was perfect because it wasn't so good at creating things that didn't exist. It wasn't so great at making things disappear that you didn't want in a photo.
Thomas Knoll developed the program with his brother John back in the late 1980s. They called it Display.
It was designed to do kind of visual effects. I don't think they had maybe this vision that it's going to be used for everything.
Everything from altering photos to developing marketing and advertising campaigns, says Lev Manovich. He's a professor of computer science at City University of New York and author of the book The Language of New Media. The Knoll brothers sold the program to Adobe in 1988. And he says after the company launched it in 1990, it really took off.
Like if you say, Lev, what has been most important software for you in your life, but also in terms of like visual media, advertising, I think would have to be Photoshop.
But for all its many innovations, Photoshop has brought a downside too, says Bryn Austin. She teaches public health at Harvard. She says the perfection that Photoshop brings to images like portraits can be especially damaging to kids who feel like they have to look perfect.
This digital distortion that we're drowning in, the psychological impact on young people is something that concerns us a great deal.
She says most images we see on magazine covers and in social media posts are almost certainly altered. There's now a battle between authenticity and perfection. A perfection, Austin says, that's only achievable through computer software. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Now, I wouldn't say I'm a Photoshop master, but I'm good. I've got a great prom picture of my wife I cherish. A little Photoshop, and gone was that guy on her arm whom she went with. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.